This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Universal 1440's Unbroken, Path to Redemption, based on the best-selling book telling the rest of the true story of Olympian and World War II hero Louis Zamperini. Louis finds love, but still must battle to learn how to forgive his captors and find peace in God. Unbroken, Path to Redemption, rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13, in theaters now. More information is available at unbrokenfilm.com.
This is Janet Mefford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mefford.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for being with us. This is just astounding. NPR. I suppose I shouldn't even use the word astounding when I'm talking about something NPR did. Because it really isn't that surprising. But you might have heard that there is a new film coming out on the life of Kermit Gosnell. And we had interviewed on this show about a year ago, Fallon McAleer, who had put out a book about Gosnell and now is part of this effort to put a film out on this butcher in Philadelphia who did unspeakable things to little babies and kept body parts all around his butcher shop, as it were, a.k.a. abortion clinic, and was not investigated for years. And there were cover-ups trying to make sure that abortion clinics were not sufficiently checked so this horror show could have been discovered years earlier. But this is quite amazing. And this is via the Daily Beast. Early last month, this executive producer of the film, a man by the name of John Sullivan, reached out to National Public Radio to try to purchase a sponsorship for Fresh Air. This is one of their award-winning shows. And Sullivan crafted his ad copy to answer the question, who is Gosnell? The proposed ad said support for this program comes from the film, and they name the film, and they describe it as the true story of abortionist Kermit Gosnell, a story the mainstream media tried to cover up because it reveals the truth about abortion. Now, do you think NPR would run something like that? No. According to emails provided to the Daily Beast, NPR's representative ran it up the legal flagpole and came back with a disappointing answer. In addition to other minor tweaks to the wording, their response stated, the word abortionist will also need to be changed to the neutral word doctor. Okay. You don't want to have the A word attached to a serial killer because that would sully the A word. I'm sorry. What does the A word mean again? Oh, yes. Killing people. It's incredible. So they were trying to find an acceptable compromise. And this Sullivan gentleman next proposed simply using the term abortion doctor. All right, fine. We won't call him an abortionist. Maybe that's a little too over the top for NPR's audience, but he's an abortion doctor. Why is that? Because that's what he does. He kills children for a living. It's called abortion. People who are pro-abortion use the word abortion every single day and have no problem with it. So this should work, right? No. NPR refused to approve Sullivan's compromise language. He had to use the term Philadelphia Dr. Kermit Gosnell or nothing. And so this was a deal breaker. And Fallon McAleer said, our movie isn't about a podiatrist or a cardiologist or a proctologist. It's specifically about a doctor who performs abortions. Now, the Daily Beast asked NPR's senior director of media relations, Isabel Lara, and she said, quote, sponsor credits that run on NPR are required to be value neutral to comply with FCC requirements and to avoid suggesting bias in NPR's journalism. I'm trying not to laugh. Right, because NPR is so unbiased. And if you actually called Kermit Gosnell what he is, that might show bias because NPR is known to be so unbiased. Are these people crazy? And you have to be neutral. Wait a second. How is it a problem to call an abortionist when that's what he is? Or an abortion doctor, that's what he does. It's descriptive. But the reason, in my view, that they don't want to say this is because it sullies abortion. And you don't want to make abortion look bad, even though abortion is about as bad as it gets in human life. Killing a child in the womb who is completely innocent and completely trusting, and that should be the safest place in the world for any child coming into this world. And you on the left are pro-abortion, and you have no problem with this, and you have no problem with women killing their children every single day. So when it comes to this sort of a value judgment, you certainly don't want to make it look bad. It's incredible. Now, I want to go back to my interview with Phelan McAleer from last year, because we talked a little bit about Kermit Gosnell and what he got away with and how his crimes were not discovered earlier. I want to go to this particular cut in which he explained who was most to blame for Gosnell getting away with those crimes for so long. This is cut one.
I think the regulators, you know, there's lots of abortion regulations in Philadelphia. Now, I mean, you can have an abortion in Philadelphia up to 24 weeks. That's 6 months. Like, that's, which amazed a lot of the people investigating this case. They didn't know the law. Even the lawyers didn't know the law. The law in Pennsylvania clearly states there's supposed to be an annual inspection of abortion clinics every year. They did this. And even though they saw horrific conditions, and even though they knew he wasn't qualified, they just, looked the other way. But then, funny enough, what happened was the election, believe it or not, of the Republican governor to Pennsylvania, back in those days, you know, back before the last election, of course, the conventional wisdom was that you had to be nice Republican. You had to be a nice Republican to win Pennsylvania. So Tom Ridge ran as a nice, moderate, pro-choice Republican. He was elected. He then said, we're doing away, even though the law says there has to be annual inspections, we're going to ignore the law, do away with the annual inspections. And they did. And no one inspected Kermit Gosnell's clinic for 17 years. And literally, and I don't mean this metaphorically, I mean literally, the bodies started piling up in the cellar. The bodies of women were being carried out the front door, out the emergency exits. These are adult patients. He went on a killing spree because no one came in the door for 17 years.
Well, you certainly wouldn't want to bring somebody like that to justice, would you, for 17 years? You certainly wouldn't want to do that. Isn't that despicable to hear that again? It is for me, even though I already knew it. It's just beyond the pale. My mind can't even wrap around something that evil. But there were a lot of complaints, if you'll recall, about Kermit Gosnell over the years. This was something else that Phelan McAleer addressed with me a year ago. Listen to cut two.
But Gosnell, he had every manner of whistleblower. He had every manner of official complaint. Emergency room doctor for complaining, was people who complained to the homicide department of Philadelphia. There were whistleblowers. Somebody delivering the vaccines for children was so upset by the conditions she ran to her car and phoned from the car to her supervisor. There were doctors who made handwritten complaints. There were dead women, like, you know, there were medical examiners saying this woman has died in there, and the file was always stamped no further investigation needed. Until what happened was that he was selling drugs. He was selling OxyContin to drug dealers, and it was a drug cop. It was a narcotics investigator who stepped above the line and put his neck out and went and investigated homicides when he should have been really investigating narcotics. And got a lot of heat from the politicians. Got a lot of heat from the homicide department. They're very territorial. So if it hadn't been for this one hero cop, Jim Wood, Gosnell would still be killing. America's biggest serial killer would still be killing in plain sight.
Oh, man. Incredible. Now, here's where the irony really comes in. We're talking about NPR refusing to take ad copy for the new Kermit Gosnell film because they called him an abortionist. And they said, no, you can't call him an abortionist. And they said, well, can we call him an abortion doctor? No, you can't call him an abortion doctor. You have to refer to him as Philadelphia Dr. Kermit Gosnell. Why in the world would NPR say that? Well, this is what's really weird about it. As the Daily Beast points out, a quick search turns up past NPR stories in which they refer to Kermit Gosnell as an abortion doctor. There's one title, Joyce Carol Oates' new novel begins with an abortion doctor's murder. There's another one, Abortion Doctor Killer Appeals to Kansas High Court. NPR even did a special series called Training the Next Generation of Abortion Doctors. Yeah, but it looks like in all of those three instances, they're using abortion doctor in a positive context. You know, Abortion Doctor Killer Appeals to Kansas High Court. In other words, it's a story about the murder of an abortionist. So you can call him an abortion doctor there because he's the victim. Or you can talk about training the next generation of abortion doctors because they're doing something virtuous. They are the next generation to kill the further generation of children. It's just so evil. It's so wicked. And it's so hypocritical of NPR. And this is an outlet that gets how much taxpayer money? They're supposed to be completely unbiased, and what they're doing is bending over backwards to make sure that Kermit Gosnell doesn't look that bad. You can't look much worse than Kermit Gosnell. You really can't. You can't look much worse. And if you go back into all the details of what he did to babies and what he did to women in that clinic, It is so horrifying. The left can't bear to look at it, to see it for what it is, because it makes them look so bad. We're going to go to a break. You're listening to Janet Mefford Today. We'll return right after this. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? We're happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you'll access health care, so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $199 per month for a single, up to $529 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org. Regain control over your healthcare costs. Together, we're changing healthcare for good. That number again, 855-585-4237 or visit libertyhealthshare.org.
From Universal 1440 comes Unbroken, Path to Redemption. Based on the best-selling book telling the rest of the true story of Olympian and World War II hero Louis Zamperini.
Tonight, there's a drowning man just looking for some type of hope for the future. But there's a lifeline. Just reach out.
Unbroken, Path to Redemption. Rated PG-13. May be inappropriate for children under 13. Now playing. More information is available at unbrokenfilm.com.
If you're looking for adventure, serving as a volunteer on the Mercy Ship is an adventure like no other. And you'll be serving on the largest non-governmental hospital ship in the world, providing free care to some of the world's poorest people. Whether it's performing a surgery, cleaning the deck, or transporting a patient to a recovery center, every day you'll be making a difference in the lives of struggling people. Begin your adventure today. Connect with us at mercyships.org. It's an adventure of a lifetime.
Welcome back to Janet Mefford Today. There's no question that the left is angry and that the left is constantly calling out everybody from President Trump to Judge Kavanaugh to Republicans in general for moral failure, earned or unearned. But does this righteous indignation betray liberals' claim that they don't believe in God? We're going to talk about it today with Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, who addresses this subject in his latest column at The Washington Times. His book is called Not a Daycare, The Devastating Consequences of Abandoning Truth. Dr. Piper, so great to welcome you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Janet. Thanks for having me on again.
Well, good to have you here. You say recent headlines really show that liberals and progressives do believe in God, even though we find a lot of them saying they don't believe in God. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's true for any of us, whether you're left or whether you're right. If you have a sense of indignation, if you're righteously indignant, if you get angry with someone else because you disagree with them, you disagree with their actions, their behavior, or their beliefs, if you're outraged, all of these things point to a fact that you think there's a measuring rod outside of them that can allow you to judge them as being wrong. If you disagree with me, if you're angry with me, if you're indignant towards me, then you think you're right, you think I'm wrong, therefore you're appealing to some standard that's bigger and better than you or me to serve as the judge of that particular sense of justice. So, and the left does this all the time. They claim that conservatives are wrong. They claim that the right is wrong. They claim that Donald Trump or Kavanaugh or, you know, pick your devil, pick your demon, that they're wrong. In the very accusation that they're morally wrong and that their indignation, they, meaning the left's indignation, is right, they therefore have subconsciously admitted that they believe in God after all, and I would argue even the God of the Bible.
That's interesting. Now, I'm sure a liberal who would be confronted with that truth would disagree and say, no, I'm just coming to a conclusion based on the collective's assessment of what is right and wrong. It's not coming from God, but really they're wrong about that. And I'm wondering how you would respond to a liberal who would say that.
Well, I just had somebody say that to me about a half hour ago.
Oh.
So let me give my response.
Great.
His response was, if you can go all the way back to Aristotle, and the argument is that there's this, some sense of collective moral goodness that serves as that measuring rod, and it doesn't have to be God, it doesn't have to be the supernatural. And I said, well, you may have read Aristotle, but you haven't read Chesterton, because Chesterton himself has told us that the most empirically obvious fact of all of Christian theology is the proof of original sin. And all you have to do is turn on the nightly news to see that Chesterton is right.
Yes.
Pick your news, any day, any time, and you can see that men, human beings, are broken. We are not innately good. In fact, we're the opposite. We are a broken race, and we inevitably lean toward those things that are deceptive, dishonest, unjust, and frankly, just immoral and not right. And the news is prolific with that fact day in and day out. So to argue that somehow we have this collective sense of goodness that guides us to be a moral people flies in the face of the most empirically obvious fact of our daily existence, and that is that it just ain't so. So if that's the case, whether you're left or right, and you could admit that the news is generally bad and that you think you have the right to judge it as being bad, who are you making your appeal to? In fact, I use this analogy in my article. You know, arguing with yourself is kind of senseless, if not crazy, in the extreme. It's kind of like barking at yourself in the mirror if you're a dog. It makes no sense. So if you have this sense of indignation, if you're growling per se, you shouldn't be growling at yourself as if you can appeal to yourself. You have to be appealing to something else to prove that you're right and your opponent is wrong. And that's God.
Yes. And it's interesting because we've been swimming in this sea of moral relativism for years now. And with the resistance, with these accusations, for example, against Judge Brett Kavanaugh, with what's going on with Donald Trump, it seems that those on the left who would adhere to this mentality are moving away from moral relativism to some extent into this idea that I have a standard that is decoupled from any belief in a creator necessarily, but I'm really upset. And this really flies in the face of this former ideal that they espoused, which was you can have your truth and I'll have my truth. They're not really there anymore, are they?
No, it's postmodernity never worked. They may have thought it would, or maybe they just knew it wouldn't work and they just used it as a lever for power to gain the upper hand. But postmodernity doesn't work, and if you want to define postmodernity, it's this argument that it doesn't matter what you believe as long as it works for you. Well, they clearly don't think that, because what works for Donald Trump, they find abhorrent. What works for, again, choose your conservative icon, they find to be tremendously objectionable. So they really don't believe that all values are equal. They're not moral relativists. They believe in a moral standard. They believe in a measuring rod. They believe in justice. Well, if you believe in justice, you've got to have a judge. So the question we as Christians should be asking is this. Great, we're on the same page now. We believe in morality. We believe something's right and something worse is wrong. Great, we agree. Now, is there any measuring rod in all of human history that provides us that perfect standard upon which to have this debate? And the answer is yes.
Yes.
It's found in the Christ of Scripture.
Right, exactly. But they have a problem, and I guess to some extent we all do, but there is an incredible hypocrisy that people point out. They're horrified by these accusations against Judge Kavanaugh, for example, but not so much horrified by the accusations against Keith Ellison. So they're not even consistent with their outrage. They're outraged by Trump's indiscretions, but not necessarily by Bill Clinton's. How do we leverage that argument to say, listen, you're really off base here. You need to understand what is going on in your head that you might not even be acknowledging?
I like there's a black pastor out there, Vaudi Baucham.
Yes.
And he has a great sermon where he talks about Levitical law and how people pick and choose and how Christians get cornered because they say, well, you pick and choose. You pick and choose your Levitical laws. You don't believe in sexual sin, but you eat shellfish and you don't adhere to Levitical law thoroughly. Well, Baucham turns it around and he suggests, tell them this. Respond to the left, your adversary, this way. Well, don't you pick and choose? Because you don't believe in lying. You don't believe Donald Trump should lie. You don't believe so-and-so should be let off the hook for sexual assault. Well, you're picking and choosing because you think those things are bad, but yet you don't think these other Levitical laws, these other laws that are found in Scripture are relevant. So we both are picking and choosing, but conservatives, ironically, know why. We know why we pick and choose because we understand the difference between ceremonial law, moral law, and civil law. We understand the progression of Scripture. We understand that Jesus Christ has met the standard of the ceremonial law of the temple by being that sacrifice for our sins, and we don't have to, nor should we, nor could we go around sacrificing animals any longer in the temple. You can't do that, and there's a reason for it. So the left acknowledges this reach, this call for law, but they want to be the author in and of themselves of that law, not recognizing that the law that they're pursuing has a better and more permanent standard that gives greater freedom rather than less, and that's the law that's found in Scripture, found in the fulfillment of Christ.
That's great. Well, and along with that, this is something you can bring up when you talk with the liberal who might be outraged about this Republican, but not the same behavior with the Democrat whose agenda they like. The Christian, as you note, knows the system. At least if you call a Christian on that hypocrisy, you'll say, you're right, that's not fair. A liar is bad no matter who it is. But it would also point back to a flawed system of self-analysis, wouldn't it, with the liberal, that the liberal considers himself or his collective to be the ultimate standard of who gets it and who doesn't. And if you can break down that standard as itself unjust, is that not a way to get the liberal to turn his eyes to Scripture in a different way?
It is, and it's also a way to turn the whole issue of arrogance and humility back to where it really needs to be. I once had a young man, he was 17 years old, he was brilliant, he was an Ivy League intellect. He was debating me, and he was frustrated, and he said, you know, the problem with you conservatives is you always think you're right. Well, my question back to him is this, do you think you're right in criticizing conservatives for being right?
Yes.
And then he went on and he said, well, you guys are arrogant. And I said, now, why is it arrogant for me to admit that there is an answer at the end of the day, but I'm not the author of it? But for you to suggest that you are the end-all and the be-all of everything that's right and wrong. Now, who's really being arrogant here? So I think Christians should admit we are hypocrites. All of us are broken. All of us have done things that are duplicitous and wrong. It's called sin. Christians recognize that and realize that there's a solution for it, and it's that measuring rod outside of ourselves. It's the humility of falling before the cross of Christ in repentance, whereas the progressive mind actually worships himself. He likes the God he sees in the mirror much more than he likes the one he finds in the Bible, and that's what he's worshiping.
Well, that's right. And do you think that in some way the anger can be fueled because for the progressive who is not a Christian, there is no hope beyond you get in line, Trump, or you get in line, Republicans? You know, for the Christian, you can look at a politician who might frustrate you or a political debate that might drive you crazy, but say, you know, the Lord is sovereign, the Lord's in control. For somebody who's not a Christian, you don't even have that as a comfort.
And I think that's why they're so anxious right now. I mean, they're going hysterical because they realize that if they lose their power, then their whole worldview is upended, because the progressive worldview is not grounded in freedom. It's not a covenantal worldview, to quote Oz Guinness. It is a hierarchical worldview. It's a hierarchy of power. And when you dismantle the hierarchy of progressivism of the left, they panic because now their worldview has crumbled. If you try to do that to a conservative, we have the confidence in a covenant that is beyond us. We're a covenantal worldview. We're not a hierarchical worldview. And covenantal worldviews, per Oz Guinness, always lead to greater freedom rather than less. And that's our argument in the end. Do you want people to have more freedom, or do you want them to be bound and obligated to your power and to your privilege?
That is really an excellent point. Well, we are out of time. Again, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. Check out his column in the Washington Times on this subject. Such a great piece, Dr. Piper. Thanks a lot for being here. We'll be right back on Janet Mefford Today. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Preborn. For $140, you can provide ultrasounds to 5 women in crisis pregnancies. Call now, 855-601-BABY. That's 855-601-2229, or click the Preborn banner at janetmefford.com. We are back on Janet Mefford Today. Economist Francis Fukuyama made an interesting observation recently about President Trump. He accused the president of doing racist things, whatever that means. And then he said Trump instinctively picks these racial themes in order to drive people on the left crazy, and they get more and more extreme in their response. I think he sees an opportunity to divide people and make the Democrats less united as a competitor. Very interesting. Is the president intentionally trying to drive the left crazy? Well, he certainly has done so, and we're going to get some thoughts on it now from Dr. Gina Loudon. She's a psychology expert, of course, a member of the Trump 2020 Campaign Media Advisory Board and co-host of America Talks Live on Newsmax TV. Her new book is called Mad Politics, Keeping Your Sanity in a World Gone Crazy. Dr. Gina, it's great to have you with us. How are you?
It's great to be with you, Janet. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right. This is right up your alley, because we had Bush derangement syndrome, as you know, in the 2000s. But we have seen the left really take the crazy train to a whole new level. Is this something that President Trump is bringing about, or do you think they're doing this organically?
Well, whether he's doing it to intentionally make them crazy, I don't know. But certainly it is his presidency that has made them crazy. He is a disruptor. He came in to shine the light on the people who were behaving badly in government and media, and to take power away from the power elite and give it back to we the people. And that is not going to be met with subtle resistance, Janet, as you can imagine. And so, yes, while they're reacting to President Trump, I think he'd probably much rather have an easy ride. I'm sure he'd rather have as easy a ride as an Obama or even a Bush, as you mentioned.
Right.
But that's not going to be the case for him, because when you threaten people's power and money, they get pretty angry.
Yes, they absolutely do. And it's interesting, because no matter what Trump has thrown at him, he's just able to lob it right back. And I would imagine that also is driving the crazy right through the roof for the left, because he's not rolling over and dying every time they try to attack.
Well, that's right. And forever, you and I, people like us who wish that somebody would stand strong for our faith, stand strong for the capital of Israel to be put back rightfully in Jerusalem, stand strong against the Johnson Amendment and so many other things that have been so wrong for so long. We've been waiting for somebody to come along and stand strong for those. And who would have ever thought it would have been this president? But it is, and that's a big part of what they don't like about him. Because when you restore civility and Christianity and Judeo-Christian values and families and neighbors and churches, you're really threatening the entire base of the left. We know, because of history that we studied, that throughout history they've had to dismantle faith in order to institute socialism or communism.
Yep.
And that is, make no mistake about it, that is the goal of the left. It is the stated goal of the left. Look, they said that Alexandria Castro Ortega, or however you say her last name, I don't know why I can't think of it ever, that she's the future of their party. She's a stated socialist.
Yeah.
And so, when you look at what they're trying to do, they have to divide us up into little pieces by race and color and religion and gender and all the rest of it, so that they can prove themselves, responsible for us and all of the free stuff that we need from government. And this president came along and said, actually, I'd like to make every American as rich as me. And I write about that in Mad Politics. I talk about his personality and what prompted this in his presidency, and why I feel like he may possibly be one of the more sane people to ever occupy the Oval Office.
Well, that is interesting. I want to get to that. And, when you mention Alexandria, it's interesting about her, because the more interviews she does, the more ridiculous socialism looks. She's just not even able to articulate socialism very well or answer basic questions. You mentioned Israel. She didn't even know how to talk about Israel. And then she backtracked and she said, well, I'm not really into foreign policy so much. I mean, if this is the brand new face of the Democratic Party, then I don't think it's so bright for them, especially when the economy is roaring under President Trump and you've got Obama coming forward and trying to take credit for it. It's just really looking right. Pathetic.
Right. Right. Well, what's a little $40 trillion between friends, Janet? I mean, she doesn't know where the $40 trillion that is going to come from, that she wants to have for spending for free income for everyone, which isn't even income by definition. But anyway, free healthcare, free college tuition, forgiveness of all debts. The list goes on and on of all the free stuff that the Democrats are desperately throwing out there to voters, saying, please, please vote for us. We don't really have a platform, but we'll just give you free everything. When they know they can't back that up.
Right.
And so you have somebody like the president saying, I think actually if I loosen regulations and bring back our economy the way I have planned, I think Americans can all be wealthy. And that is the message they are terrified of. So they have to call him crazy. My book disputes that, and that's why they hate it so badly.
Absolutely. I thought you really touched on something important when you said the problem for the Democrats right now is here they have this divide where they have to use billionaires to get money, but they also need Joe Sixpack to vote for them. And in many respects, it's based on a longstanding loyalty to the Democratic Party. But now you have people in the Democratic Party who are saying, well, wait a minute, you guys are hypocrites. You decry crony capitalism, but then look at the Clintons. So how does that affect, would you say, the momentum of the left at the moment? They want to have this big blue wave at the midterms, but will they really get it?
Well, they can't, Janet, and here's why. It's practically impossible for them, just from a strictly strategic perspective, not even from a partisan perspective at all. There's no way they can do it because, as you said, and as I wrote in my book, Mad Politics, they have to have the money from the left, the Hollywood elite, the left on both coasts, the Wall Street and the Hollywood elite and Silicon Valley. They have to have all of that money. And the thing about those people and that money is that it's all extraordinarily leftist, just like Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez. And so, therefore, they have to take up that mantle, right?
Right.
But at the same time, the average yellow dog Democrat sitting somewhere in the Midwest or in Iowa, or maybe he's a union guy in Detroit, and all of a sudden the jobs are coming back and he's got rehired, and his friend down the street who happens to be black has a job, you know, black unemployment, Hispanic, Asian, women, all at record lows. How do you fight that? That is a real message, but it's not just talk, it's walk. And so now that we have actual proof that this presidency is working and his numbers are increasing with conservatives, I believe Rasmussen, with black Americans, I believe Rasmussen has it at 36% with black Americans. If you are a Democrat and you have always been able to divide people by race and convince them they need you and they need to vote for you, or the right is going to, I don't know what, bring back slavery or something horrific, then you cannot let that sit unanswered. But they don't have an answer, and they can't have an answer because the left is controlling the purse strings and the moderate Democrats are controlling the votes. How do you win in that scenario? There's no way. So they have to declare, they have to get rid of this president. They have to declare my book incompetent, me incompetent, Kavanaugh incompetent or sexually aggressive or whatever you want to, and the president crazy. And if there's any message counter to that, they have to destroy it because they have no other way to keep their power and money. That's their problem.
Well, that is their problem. And that's why you have people citing the 25th Amendment. That's why it's Russia. Let's just yell Russia a little bit more loudly. And maybe this time it'll work. And I'm wondering if they come to the end of the Mueller investigation and they have nothing at the end of it all to point to by which they actually could impeach President Trump, what their next strategy might be. Where do you go after however long we've been in this fruitless investigation against President Trump and his alleged collusion with Russia during the campaign? It's just there's no there.
Well, Janet, they're at violence now. I mean, let's look at what's happened over the last year. We have the advocation of violence because they have dehumanized anyone who disagrees with them. This is now, let's remember, dehumanization. Where have we seen this in our history? Again, this is why they don't want our kids to know history. We've seen it. We saw it in Nazi Germany. We even saw it against the Japanese. We've seen it, of course, with the horrible atrocity taking place every single day in our culture that I know you talk about. Thank you for that all the time, and that is abortion. We, as taxpayers, support abortion, a private industry, Planned Parenthood, to the tune of $1.5 million every single day. And somehow this has stood, and they have dehumanized babies by calling them other things besides babies, and it has worked for them beautifully. And so that's exactly what they want to do to anyone who disagrees with their argument. It's the only thing they have left is to dehumanize us, and we've seen it. We saw it when Steve Scalise was shot. We saw it when Rand Paul was attacked at his own home. We've seen it when this young man that I met at a Turning Point event was in water was thrown in his face by a full-grown adult.
Yeah, I know.
This is a young kid for wearing a MAGA hat. I mean, what is next, Janet? These attacks are happening daily. They go unreported. And so when you ask what's next, that's it.
I know. You're so right about that. We're going to take a very short break. Dr. Gina Loudon with us. Her book, Mad Politics. We'll come back on Janet Meffer Today right after this. Hi, this is Janet Mefford, and we're partnering with the Ministry of Preborn to save babies' lives through ultrasound. Here's how a nurse describes the power of an ultrasound.
Last week, just one example of a mom who came in was very abortion-minded, and when she saw the picture of her baby on ultrasound and saw that beating heart, it was a defining moment that just broke her, and she said, I just can't allow this baby to be killed, for her own words.
By letting a mother hear her baby's heartbeat and see her baby in her womb, she will choose life 80% of the time.
I cannot tell you how many times a baby's life is saved through ultrasound. It's just an incredible tool.
Will you help save babies' lives? For $140, you can sponsor free ultrasounds for 5 young women. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, call now, 855-601-BABY. That's 855-601-2229. Or click the preborn banner at janetmefford.com.
From Universal 1440 comes Unbroken, Path to Redemption. Based on the best-selling book telling the rest of the true story of Olympian and World War II hero Louis Zamperini.
Tonight, there's a drowning man just looking for some type of hope for the future. But there's a lifeline. Just reach out.
Unbroken, Path to Redemption. Rated PG-13. May be inappropriate for children under 13. Now playing. More information is available at unbrokenfilm.com.
Do you have scars in your life that's stopping you from experiencing victory day after day? Listen to me. If you've experienced the forgiveness of God, don't let the scars pull you down, but rather let them remind you of the mercy of God that is working in your life.
Dig deeper this week on Leading the Way with Dr. Michael Youssef.
Welcome back to Janet Meffer Today. It is tough sometimes to keep your sanity in a world gone crazy, but Dr. Gina Loudon is with us to help a little bit in that regard. Her book is called Mad Politics, and we're so glad Dr. Gina is with us. You were talking a little bit about the craziness of the left, Dr. Gina, and how it is that we're already at the point of violence. And I think that's the direction that we're seeing growing, which worries a lot of Americans, which concerns a lot of people, because we do know the history of socialism. And I think there's a lot of us who just don't want to allow our minds to go there and think about what would happen if the violence occurred on a much larger scale. But to what extent do you think that's a real threat, that it would become more widespread than simply an Antifa, you know, window smashing, fire setting spree at Berkeley?
Yeah, well, I think that we need to look no farther than Steve Scalise, what happened to him this year, Janet. I mean, he could be dead. And my guesstimation is that at some point that will happen. I know I received death threats to my home address, which is unpublished, just yesterday. And I'm sure you get them too. Mm-hmm. And so my point is, we're there. And that's why I wrote this book. I wanted to give the average American citizen who just is sitting and looking at all this craziness, and like you said, may even be afraid to face the reality of what we're actually looking at. I wanted to give them tips to dismantle all of this before it is completely and utterly out of control, if it's not already. And so in the book, Mad Politics, I go over the reason that I think that the president is sane. Now, that should be an assurance to people. Wouldn't you want a sane president sitting in the Oval Office? But I go through his family of origin, his family history, his birth order, his personality type, and just some fun stuff. It's not too weedy. It's not too psychobabbly. I hate all that stuff. But it's really just real people talk, things that make sense to people. And I go over that. And I know the president personally and his family. And you compare my book, for example, to Mr. Woodward's book, which was largely heralded. I don't know how many millions he's already made off of it after being discredited by virtually every president in our lifetime, right? Mm-hmm. Who doesn't, you know, Mr. Woodward does not know the president. He has zero background in human behavior. I have all of the above going for me. But the thing is, I decided to write something positive about the president and the American people and patriotism and God and country. And therefore, I am being slurred all over, media all over. I've had some really great backup. The president tweeted me. Sean Hannity has tweeted me. I've had some really great backup like that, and great support for my book. But they've gone in and they have so messed with my Amazon reviews that they had to stop allowing Amazon reviews because the left has a concerted effort to drive my star rating down on Amazon. So now you can't even post a review for my book. So if that doesn't tell you how badly we need whatever is written in my book that the left does not want you to know, nothing will.
Yeah, there you go. That's exactly right. Well, when you talk about President Trump having the good kind of crazy, what is the good kind of crazy? What would you point to in his personality and his approach to governance that is really working well?
Well, I call it crazy like a fox. And I say that in my book, I say that I suggest anyway that narcissism should be on a spectrum. People always say, you know, he's a narcissist. Well, Janet, you may be the only exception in all of radio who doesn't have some bit of narcissism in their brain, or they wouldn't think that the whole world needs to hear what they have to say every day, myself
yeah.
included.
Yeah.
And so I'm not afraid of him being called a narcissist. I might even be able to go along with that. I'm not afraid of him being crazy. I think he is very, has mad skills, as I say in the book. I think that he is crazy like a fox. I think that he lets the other side think that he's crazy enough that they just maybe better not cross him. And he's taught that lesson over and over again. And I don't think that's a bad thing, because we all know the left is crazy. There's not a soul out there that doesn't think the left will go to any extreme to take back over our political system as they'd like to. So I like the idea that they're sort of left wondering, is he crazy enough to, I don't know, push some button or pass some crazy law? He's not. He's actually very level-headed, very sound-minded, very compassionate, actually. He's lived a real human life in terms of sin, and he would tell you that. And he's not a perfect person, and his tactics aren't always maybe what I would choose if I were getting to pick his communication methods and things like that. But nonetheless, here we are in the most prosperous economic times in world history. We are safer than ever before. We are healthier than ever before. The threat of terror is lower here in the United States than ever before. We have a lot to take care of overseas. I get that. That's next. But we can't do it all at once. Israel is in a better place than it's ever been, and we're commanded to make sure of that, and we did it with this election. I can't tell you. We are living in the best times ever. And I advise my readers in Mad Politics, you know, stop and enjoy it for a cotton-picking minute, because we have got right. to take advantage of the fact that here we are in the best times ever, and we should be enjoying them. And this goes straight across the board for every race, every religion, every gender, every color. It is a good time to be alive in America, and that's a good thing.
Well, it is. And you know, it's very interesting for those of us who recall the 80s and how patriotic those times were, where we were very proud under President Reagan to fly our flags and to sing God Bless the yes. USA and all that. There, it's reminiscent of the 80s. It's different, obviously, but it's reminiscent, because what Trump really did was awaken in the American people that old sense that this has historically been such a great country, and we want it to be great again in so many ways. And I think for a lot of people who might have been hesitant to vote for him initially, they have been shocked, and pleasantly so, surprised by the fact that he has been the most pro-life president in American history in terms of what he's done. He's done the hard work of actually moving the embassy to Jerusalem and Israel. I mean, nobody thought that would ever be, you know, accomplished by any president.
Right.
And on and on and on, and been a great friend to Christians. And I think for my audience and for Christians who were saying, well, we don't want Hillary, but we'll try Trump, we don't know what else to do, they have been
right.
Really marveling, I think, at how loved they feel, if you want to use that word, or at least respected in a way that Madam Basket of Deplorables never would have treated us.
You're exactly right, and I don't think I could put it better. And you know your audience, but you know what's really cool? President Trump knows your audience, too.
Yes.
And those are the people that he's chosen to surround himself with. You look at, you know, I am a strong believing Christian, professed pretty much my whole entire life, except for, I think, a moment in college where I was deluded, like so many are. and you look at people like Sarah Huckabee Sanders, you know, daughter of Mike Huckabee, strong Christian family. You look at Hogan Gidley, deputy press secretary, great Christian man I've come to know, great person. And the list goes on. And it's not like he's only seeking out Christians in some, you know, biased way at all. He has, of course, you know, people like Pastor Daryl Scott calling him the most black president we've ever had, or the blackest president we've ever had. You know, we have people from all different walks of life, all different faiths, all different races. And so it's just very hard to make a valid argument based on sound data that says that this president isn't really interested in equality, perhaps more than any other president in history. And that is another great piece of news. You know, I look at all the scriptural references that I think can apply to the times we're in right now, because they're so good and they're so bad. You know, it's both. It's a mix. And I find myself over and over again just believing so clearly that God really had his hand in this election, and that nobody else, not one of the 15 other gentlemen on the stage could possibly, at the Republican National Convention, could possibly have disrupted enough, Janet, to have actually made the difference this president made. There's just not a way they couldn't have. It's not a matter of not wanting to. They just couldn't have. Right. And that's what's amazing about God's use of this president at this time.
Well, and what do you make of the crazy media? I don't want to forget to touch on that, because we're in an era of fake news. The most recent thing they were talking about was the non-existent Nikki Haley curtain scandal. And I mean, it's just daily. And then they turn around and Chuck Todd says things like, we need to fight back because we're being, you know, disenfranchised by the president. We're being attacked. And they don't seem to recognize, no, you're being attacked because you keep reporting fake news. Maybe you should deal with that.
Yes, they are in a frenetic panic. And again, this doesn't come down to any sort of morality for them. So don't ever misunderstand it for morality. Look at motivation. What would be the media's motivation in what they're doing to this president and anybody who supports them on a daily basis? There's only one thing. It's about power and it's about money. I always say follow the money trail. In any given situation, Janet, I believe you can look at the money trail and you can get to where you need to be without somebody preaching at you to tell you what your politics are.
Right.
You can just follow logic and reason and money and get to the end game. And the end game is most of these media outlets were making tons and tons of money, right?
Right.
Up until the president came along and discredited them just by being himself. And now we have newspapers dying on the vine. We have cable outlets that have always had high ratings that are at the bottom of the barrel, making less in cable ratings than, you know, some shows that are quite comical on television. And so go through this and you realize, oh, okay, now I get it. They feel threatened. But they don't understand. And here's where I think we can add some levity to the situation, Janet, especially as Christians. What they don't understand is that it's not an us versus them. Like, we really are on their team, too, in terms of the left. We really want a better America that really is equal and really is just and all of those things. And so for those out there who have relatives who aren't buying into the socialist propaganda, who aren't completely in brain mode meltdown, we can talk to them.
Yes, exactly right. Well, we're out of time, but Dr. Gina Loudon, her book again is called Mad Politics. Thank you so much, Dr. Gina. It was great to have you.
Thank you, Janet, for having me.
All right. God bless you. Thanks for joining us once more. And thank you for listening to Janet Mefford today.